Radio.
Prudence and the Virtues. A talk by Bishop Peter Comensoli at Australian Catholic University.
Every human action has a moral content to it. Every human action. Cleaning your teeth in the morning is a human action. A human action is something that is you know that you're doing and you choose to do it. A knowingly willed behaviour. So something you know that you're doing and that you choose to do it. A knowingly willed behaviour. So me getting up in the morning cleaning my teeth, I know that what I'm doing and I'm choosing to do it. So it's a human behaviour. Because it's a human behaviour, it has moral content to it. You might be thinking, how can you possibly do anything wrong with the toothbrush? But everything points, the first point is to note, everything that we do as human beings that has this knowingness to it and this willingness to it has a moral content. So, body piercing is a knowingly willed behaviour, true? Presume we're all adults. So you go along to your local, wherever you go to get yourself pierced, and you say, I want earrings in. You know what you're doing, you're willing to do it. So there's a moral value to that. As you know, you can get pierced just about anywhere in your body these days. So there's questions about, I would at least hope and expect that, you know, you would say, oh, earrings, what's wrong with, why are we talking about earrings? But you might start going, around genital piercings, for instance. So the question of body piercing as a knowingly willed behaviour is, in fact, a moral question. But then,
the issue is this. How do you go working out making judgments about what's morally good or evil, what is right or wrong in regards to this?
So, we can start with a question like, is body piercing okay? Morally okay, not whether you like it or not, but morally okay. When is it okay? Is there any limits to what can be pierced or how many times you can be pierced and so on and so forth? And why? You know, if you go in to genital piercings or to you've got 25 piercings on each eyebrow, why are you going in other words, why would you be having a kind of a negative reaction to some things and a positive reaction to, you know, getting your kids' ears pierced at whatever age you use your ears these days? So why is these things significant? And that's captured in underneath those four little circle dot points. Now why, in a more general sense, why is any action, this knowingly willed action, remember, why is something X right or wrong, good or bad? How do we work that out? What is it that makes X right or wrong? Even more wrong, simply when everyone says, oh yeah, go for it. Are there some things, in fact, that we can always say are wrong? Interesting question. How do you make the judgments around that? How do you make your thinking relate to that? And you might simply say something like what I said there, you know, to answer the question, God said so. You know, what? Why can't you murder? Because God says so. It's in the Ten Commandments. If the content of our morality, like the Ten Commandments, it tells us the what's and wherefores, if that was enough, then why do we have an awful lot of moral disagreements? Why if we can work it out that that the commandment says, you know, stealing is wrong, why is there all these disagreements around, say, intellectual property rights? I.e., all your downloading that you do that you shouldn't do. So we can have the content of our morality in the commandments, the principles, the norms, but they're not enough. Because if they were enough, we'd be all agreeing on everything. We'd say, oh yeah, there's a commandment that says this, therefore we're all going to do that. That's not how it works, is it? So simply having the Ten Commandments or a set of principles or norms by which we might make judgments is not enough in and of themselves to make good decisions. How then do we go about the judgments? And that's where the virtues come in. It's where the virtues come in. The commandments or the content of our morality tells us something about the thing itself that's being described, the act. What we, in moral language, what we call the object. The thing itself that's being done. So it can tell us something about whether the thing itself is right or wrong. But it doesn't tell us anything about the person who's doing the action. So there's the act itself. But what about the actor? The one who's doing the acting, doing the action. And the virtues tell us something about us as the actor. The perspective from which we come to a moral action. So a very simple structure of morality is you've got to know something about the intention. I just answered the question by saying who, where's the intention lie? It lies in the person acting. You've got to know something about the intention, you've got to know something about the act itself, which is external to the person, and you've got to know something about the circumstances in which these things are happening. So, let's go back to body piercing. And just to demonstrate how, let's presume for argument's sake, this is only for argument's sake, presume for argument's sake that getting your ears pierced, two ears, one of each ear, common practice, morally, the action itself is morally neutral, it's neither here nor there, good or bad. What happens if I go out and get my ears pierced tomorrow or tonight, this afternoon after I walk out of here, I find, where do you think you, I don't know where you ears. down the local hairdresser or something, do you?
Yeah, beautician.
So I head down to the local Stratfield beautician and say, give me a couple of earrings. The actual getting of the earrings themselves might be neither here nor there as a moral thing. But do you know anything about my intention in getting the ears pierced?
No.
But say if my intention for getting the ears pierced was to spite my mother. Does that make getting my ears pierced a morally good thing to do?
No.
Okay. So you can see how intention can make a difference. The act itself can make a difference. I think as perhaps an obvious example, piercing of your genitals, because there's no reason for piercing genitals other than essentially a sexual kind of thing that's not focused on the other person, where all our sexual activity should be focused on the self. Mm. So let's take as an example. Again, there's all sorts of other arguments that were put into there, but just a simple, obvious, at the extreme end of the act, the piercing of the genitals, as the act itself is morally problematic. Forget about why you're getting your genitals pierced, just the act itself. But the other example I just used is getting the ears pierced. The reason why I'm getting them pierced might have an impact, my intention, what I'm doing in this act. So you need both to look at the actor, the one doing, we call that the agent, and the act itself. Then there's all the circumstances around it. The circumstances themselves don't change the morality of the act. Whether I go to a shop down in Stratfield or one down in, what's the next suburb, Fairfield, changes circumstances, but it's neither here nor there in terms of much. It could be significant. I might be going to the Fairfield one because I know it's a, I don't know, you know, it's a drug dealing place as well. So I want to probably go down there and check out the deals or something at the same time. So circumstances can affect in a negative way the morality of an act, but it's not going to change the nature of it. Our attention can, the act itself can. So putting all that in context, the commandments, the principles speak mainly to the act itself. Virtues speak mainly to the actor. And our focus here is on the virtues, and I'll eventually get to the virtue of prudence. Keep my eye on the watch. Any questions about that so far? I know you get to have lots of questions specifically, but any questions about that so far? Does that make sense, first off?
Mm-hmm.
So the intention matters, the action matters, and the circumstances, to a lesser degree, are significant. Perfect sense to you?
Yes.
Then why aren't you living like that?
It explains a lot of things.
Why aren't you living like that? Why am I not living like that? Because the primary moral theory that we tend to work on in places like Australia and other Western countries puts all the emphasis on the circumstances, not on the actor or the action, but the circumstances. And most particularly of the circumstances, the consequences of the action. So that's that question in the middle there. Why is X right or wrong, good or bad? What is it that makes X wrong when everyone else says, well, go for it, it's all okay. So back to the example of me going down and getting my ears pierced. The way that we tend to think things through morally in our Australian culture is just to go to the consequences of my actions. So the consequence of me going down to the Stratfield beautician and getting my two ears pierced is that I've got two piercings in my ears. So what? Doesn't hurt anyone. Everyone does it, but most of us do it these days. So consequentially, we tend to, in our society these days, think of morality in terms of consequences. It has a special name as a moral theory. It's called consequentialism. So it's about weighing up the consequences of an action and determining the morality, its goodness or its badness, its rightness or its wrongness, in terms of the consequences. Is there going to be any bad consequences if I go and have sex with someone who loves me and what have you? General sort of way of thinking about sex these days. You think about it in a consequential kind of way. But I want to make the emphasis that while that's a very predominant way in which we think in our society these days, by the way, how democracy works, in the end, the majority rules. But I want to put to you that a Catholic way of thinking in terms of morality cannot lie just with the consequences, but must take into consideration and is principally determined by my intention and the nature of the act itself. Not just simply the consequences that might flow out of my intention and that action.
No.
Okay, so now I'm trying to... Any questions on that point first?
So basically you're saying the, in terms of Catholic morality, the end does not justify the means.
Perfect. So it's one of the basic moral principles of Catholic morality. You cannot do evil that a good may come of it. Or put it in this colloquial sense, the end, what's going to be at the end of it all, the consequences, does not justify the means or the way that you get to it. So the basic Catholic moral principle is you cannot do evil that good may come of it. So I cannot pick something that's happening at the moment. I can't go over to willy-nilly over to northern Iraq now and start killing off ISIS people here and there, because we might get a good out of it at the end. We would have gotten rid of this ideology. So I mean, it's an extreme example, but it makes the point. Basic Catholic moral principle, you cannot do evil, but a good may come of it. Or, in its colloquial sense, the end doesn't justify the means by which you get to it. The end doesn't justify it. Yeah.
It's kind of like the triple down effect, you know? Like, we think, oh, it's not going to affect anyone, but we don't realise how much we're all interconnected. Like, one person does that, it's going to be like a triple down effect kind of thing. Everyone then starts following, or vice versa. One person, like Jesus, for instance, like, can make all the difference in terms of changing people's opinions and their way of doing things. So it's kind of like that with that, you know? Like, a lot of people are not pieces, you know? Not the genital fit, no way, but belly piercing I had ears done and I've had a nose done. And I was kind of like, as a teenager, I was like, what's the big deal, you know? But now I've actually started thinking about it in different ways. It's like, well, this is a body that God has given me, and it's like saying that it's not good enough. And even though I still am an R with it, it kind of, it's a different way of thinking about it. It's like, wow, I never really thought of it that way, but... Kind of like what you said, you know, it's what your intent is. Like, for me, a big part of it, I guess, is social. And then that's not really good either, because then I'm kind of like changing myself, who I am, for other people. That's not healthy. Or because of my self-esteem.
Yeah. So all those things, yeah. I think that you're indicating, are pointing to the sense that our intention and the object itself are critical. The end product, the consequences, which form part of the circumstances of the act, are lesser important. But the really significant thing that I want to drive home to you today is that the consequences emphasis is the principal moral structure that our Australian society operates on. And if you, when you finish with today, start thinking about, just for the rest of the day, how often do you act in the day because of the outcome that you're looking for. And don't think too much about how you get to the outcome. That's a decent outcome. But not much thought. We tend in our society, hi sister, we tend in our Australian culture, in most Western places, probably much the same these days, to go just with the consequences. So we get to the point of saying, well, this isn't hurting anyone. You know, everyone's doing it. That's putting all the emphasis on the consequences. But our Catholic way of thinking, our intentions and the actions themselves matter. And they matter crucially, fundamentally. And I've been saying that in terms of the Ten Commandments, our principles and laws, that tells us something about the action particularly, in a more general, principled way. And virtues are the way that we can particularly look at how we're acting as the actor or the agent.
So, fair point. Let's go on to something about virtues now. What are they?
So the actual word virtue comes from ancient Greece, and our whole sense of our understanding of the virtues relies very, very powerfully on the ancient Greek philosophers, particularly Plato and Aristotle, most particularly Aristotle. So when we talk about virtues, this is not a uniquely Christian thing. The virtues is not a uniquely Christian thing. The virtues are about us as human beings. Okay, so we might say a little bit about how does our Christian life shape our virtuous life, our life of virtue. And to go ahead a little bit, our Christian life might tell us a bit about which particular virtues are more important compared to other virtues. Lots of virtues, some are more important than others, and our Christian faith can help us to answer which ones they are. But the first thing is, the virtue is just an excellence, a human excellence. So, what's your name?
Briggs
has a human excellence at playing the piano. We saw that in Mass a little while ago. But that excellence is his. It involves his work. So you didn't sort of wake up one day and the hands just automatically went all over the piano. Whoa, music. So it involves Briggs's own work. And excellence is something that involves work. It involves the person who's doing the work. So the virtues, we can talk about the virtues in terms of outside of the context of morality. We can talk about virtues in, a good example is the creative arts, or just trades work, someone who is making something or doing something. There's an excellence that can be pertained to the doing of something, but the excellence is that of the person who's doing it. It's not, we can in the end say, you know, that was an excellent bit of music, and put it on to some extent on the thing itself, but really it's the one who is doing it that brings it about as an excellence. That's important. So virtue is something that belongs to the individual person as an excellence. It's something that's a praiseworthy characteristic that we might have. So, Briggs, you know, praiseworthy gift of music that you have. And I'm sure you have to do practice to kind of. And if you don't, what happens?
You stuff up and yeah. You get depressed.
And it doesn't sound too excellent. So it's something that is of the person, but it's something that can be measured by others. So we have a sense of an excellence as being objective, even though it belongs to the subject. So when I say it belongs to the subject, it belongs to me. We're talking about some virtue that I'm doing as an excellence. It's mine in the sense that I'm doing it. But it's you who might be able to observe what I'm doing and say, yeah, that is excellent. Or I might be doing something thinking this is brilliant and excellent and wonderful, and you say, uh-uh. So there's an objective measurement around the virtues. So it's not just a subjective thing. It's not me deciding what is excellent about me. Mm. It has an objective dimension to it, but it belongs to me. And you can see up there on the screen, we can talk about it as a kind of a stable and rational habit of someone. Why am I putting emphasis on those three words? Let's start with the word habit. I go out the door and I'm just sort of strolling along, and all of a sudden I see a car coming and there's someone walking there, and I instinctively push them out of the way so they don't get run over. Is that virtue? Have I just expressed a virtue, or have I just reacted? So it could just say if it's a one-off thing, that's not a virtue, a once-off and then you go back to the normal position of, you know, I'll let him run over, whatever. Let them get out of the way themselves. So if it's just a one-off thing, then we're not talking about an excellence that has involved practice, for instance. You know, if somebody can just suddenly, what's the theory, guys, that if you put enough monkeys together for long enough, they'll be able to write Shakespeare, type out Shakespeare on a typewriter. In theory, if you left a bunch of monkey at a typewriter at a computer for infinity, you could type out King Lear. But that's not an excellence. That's just random possibilities. But an excellence involves a habit. And so we come to your point. How you've been raised, how you've lived your life, how you've made your choices, and you move towards an excellence. So it's a habit to start with. Notice up there I talk about it as a rational habit. So it's something that we can think through as being a good thing, as an excellence. So I can have a habit of, well, I do have a habit of cleaning the teeth after brekkie in the morning. But I don't reason through the cleaning of the teeth. I have a general basic reasoning around it's probably good to hygiene and blah, blah, blah. But I just go into the habit. Who has the habit of flicking on their TV?
That's
it. So it's a habit. Would you call that an excellence?
No.
You might be good if you do it quick. I don't know. So, the reasoning through. Where did I start? A known willed behaviour. So, reasoning, knowing about, doing, thinking it through is important. And this habit that we get into, the habit of this way of thinking about certain aspects. And it's stable. So it's not something that comes and goes, and sometimes I'm good at getting people from being run over, and other times I couldn't care less. So it's a stable thing. So I can reason through that it's good to do such and such and have a habit about doing it, but I still think, you know, oh, well, I'll do it somewhere different tomorrow, I'll change my mind. Stability is important as well. So, a virtue brings us to the subject, but it can be measured in terms objectively. And we can measure it, we can do the measuring in terms of, is this a habit, is it a rational thought through, makes reasonably good sense. And it's a stable sort of thing. Also, I got down it. Yeah, so virtues are human excellence. The virtues together order or shape our human life. So here we can start talking about particular virtues. Can anyone name a virtue? What's a virtue? Chastity, got another virtue?
Temperance,
another one?
Honesty,
another one?
Patience,
yeah, another one?
Courage,
yeah. Fortitude, courage, much the same. Yeah, so you've got an idea. You kind of can start naming off. There's four biggies. There's seven biggies, to be honest. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Seven biggies. Three of them are known as the theological virtues. Anyone know what they are? Sister, you're not going to give me something.
Faith, hope, and love.
Yeah, faith, hope, and love. Faith, hope, and charity. The theological virtues. So named because they pertain to the excellence of our relationships with God and one another. And then there's the four human or capital or moral virtues. You're supposed to know all four of them because you've organised talks on each one of them. So what are they? Prudence, justice,
temperance,
and courage.
So we've already done.
Now we have other names for some of those ones as well. So some of those other names we just mentioned. But, so there are your four cardinal virtues. Why are they called the cardinal virtues? Because cardinal in the sense of principle, main. The cardinal numbers, the main numbers. So from those four virtues, all the others can find themselves. Like some of the others we've mentioned, chastity and something I can't remember now. So the four cardinal virtues, in a sense, are the four primary virtues. And from those four, you can trace out and find connections to all the many, many other virtues that there are. Okay, excellences, remember? We're talking about excellences. So the virtues together, order or shape of human life in a particular way. So if we have as my life, if I have a certain, I live by certain rational habits. So if we're living just by a certain set of virtues in our lives, it's going to shape the way that we approach anything. So back to your example of how was I raised? What were the key values that were promoted in my family life? What are the key values that I try to live by now? What have I brought into my life? What have I said I've got to get that out of my life? So the virtues shape or put order into our lives. Why does it bring order to our lives? Because they're rational, remember? So if they were irrational, they wouldn't be bringing order, they'd be bringing chaos. They bring order to our lives. That we see things in others. We see this is a good way of living. This is an excellent way of living. Particularly we see that in something like courage. And when we see someone who acts in a courageous way, we go, wow, isn't that worth trying to emulate? I wonder how I can learn, practice that in my life so that it becomes a part of my life, shapes me. There's another part to that, the intuition part I'll get to in a minute. So the virtues can shape our lives. Just as the vices, the opposite of the virtues, the vices are habits, not very rational usually, but they're habits of our lives that shape us. That shape us in poor ways, not in good ways, not in terms of excellence, but in other ways. So if fidelity is a virtue, infidelity is a vice. If courage is a virtue, cowardice is a vice. If justice is a virtue, injustice is a vice. So all the virtues have, to some extent, a corresponding vice. But they are all habits. And they all shape who we are. If they're shaping who I am, they're shaping how I make my judgments. So back to the question of intention. So if my intention is to do something, it's shaped in the background at the very least. It might be there right front and centre, but it's shaped in at the very least in the background by the virtues by which I live and the vices by which I live. Okay. How can someone stand up at their wedding a day and say, I will be faithful to you for the rest of my life, if their entire practice prior to that is infidelity? So saying something, and even intending it sometimes, doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be the case. So I can have an immediate intention, oh yes, I'm going to be faithful. But there is that whole background of intention comes through my virtuous or vice-like ways of living that influences. Okay? So the virtues are the practices of those who engage well in human affairs. The vices are the practices of those who engage badly in human affairs. And the virtues our approach to ethical questions also can see how the use of the virtues are a way of understanding how human development happens. Why is that important? Well, if our morality is based entirely on consequences, then in a sense we should all be born with knowing exactly how to work everything out. Or if the morality depended entirely and only on the Ten Commandments, which you'd learn by the age of 5 and have an understanding of each of them by the age of 5, do you think you actually got much about you that could be a sense of a developed moral life? Well, no. There is something about growing into the moral life that's important. We grow in our understanding. And the virtues help us to do that. And they help us to start to see what is morally good and evil, what is right and wrong. The practicing of the virtues teaches us. Pope Benedict used a good example of this about 5 years ago, I suppose now, 2010 I think it was. He gave an interview and lots of people were jumping up and down and saying Pope's changed the moral law or whatever. I'll use Pope Francis' example actually. Pope Francis' example around gay people. He says, you know, are they living by the will of God? And who am I to judge? It's not saying that there's something wrong, that he's not all of a sudden saying that that homosexuality, lesbianism, transgender has as a moral object is disordered. But he's saying that the individual who's in there makes a difference. And so as long as they're living a morally good life, a virtuous life, might have judged, so the Pope put it. It's a very colloquial way. Pope Benedict put it in a much more thought out way when he talked about someone who the example, this is his example, so a male prostitute who is in the life of prostitution. He's not saying that all of a sudden it's good if he starts using a condom, but at least the condom use is starting to trigger something in the head of the person who is doing these immoral acts. And what's triggering is the protection of the other person. So it's not saying that all of a sudden it's okay to have protected sex as a male prostitute, use a condom. It's not saying that. He said it quite specifically, said it remains immoral. But the person himself has started to make a move towards a more moral life by the using of the condom, which shows that he is starting to think about what is my actions doing to this other person. So it's still an immoral act. That hasn't changed. Remember, it's the intention and the act itself that goes to the morality of an act. But there's something about his intention that's changed in the using of the condom. You can find that in his, he wrote a book. It was an interview, 2010, I think, anyway, you can look it up yourselves. So what I'm getting there is the sense of a human development. We can see that we can grow, and the virtuous life helps us to do that. That's all I wanted to say about that. Now, to finish off, I'm finally getting to the virtue of prudence. Now, this is just simply a quote directly. I've got to read this myself now because this is a bit longer. I've just taken it straight from the Catechism. So prudence, or sometimes called wisdom, or sometimes called practical reasoning, different words to describe similar sort of virtue. It's a virtue that disposes, say, prudence is a virtue. So it's a habit, it's a rational habit, it's a stable habit, and it's an excellence. So prudence is all those sort of things. That disposes our practical reasoning to discern our true good in circumstances and to choose the right means of achieving it. That's an awful lot in that one sentence. I just want to spend a bit of time going through that. The second little bit by St. Thomas Aquinas kind of sums it up. So, right reason in action. So, for prudence, I'm going to have it sitting there so I can go through each step by. So we're talking about a virtue, prudence, and this particular virtue disposes practical reasoning. Now, let me say something about practical reasoning. There's basically two kinds of reasoning that we can do, intellectual activities that we can do as human beings. One is we call speculative or scientific reasoning. The other is called practical reasoning. And moral reasoning comes under the heading of practical reasoning. What's the difference between the two? Scientific reasoning gives us knowledge about how things... what is the case? So we've got practical reasoning. We know that the Earth circles the sun, or ellipses the sun. Scientific reasoning, that speculative reasoning, we know what is the case. The Earth goes around the sun. Does that make any difference to our lives? Well, other than the obvious one, that we get sun every day, so long as we don't live in Scotland. at least you got that one. I had a few years in Scotland. You never see the sun. So the scientific reason tells us what is the case. Practical reasoning tells us how we are to act, what it is that we do. One about what is the case, the other about what to do. So this virtue of prudence disposes us, puts us in its practicing of this virtue, puts us in a disposition whereby we can reason practically, make use of our practical reasoning, our moral reasoning. And to do that, to discern, then it goes on to what is the true good in every circumstance. It's the true good in every circumstance that's important here. So it's not just a helping us to reason in a generic and general way about something. You know, murder is wrong. I've reasoned this thing, murder is wrong. It's about doing it in this particular circumstance where I've got the knife in my hand and there's someone standing in front of me and I'm about to shove it in their heart. So it's one thing talking about murder generally. What about this situation? Now I'm in right at the moment. What prudence has done is helped me to do the practical reasoning in the background that can help me to make my judgment here and now, in this circumstances, in these circumstances, at this moment, in this situation. Oh, I'm going to get there. Give me a couple more seconds to try and squeeze that out of it. So, general thing, I would hope everyone in this room would say we need to do what we can to alleviate poverty in our country. And I'm faced with an individual who I'm walking past every day in the street. How do I act towards that individual? In terms of my general reflection around poverty. So prudence is the virtue that gets me from the general thinking to the practical action. What gets me from the general thinking to the practical action is this virtue of prudence, of making the right judgment given the current circumstances I find myself in. What prudence does is gets us from a general thinking about something to what to do in this particular set of circumstances. What am I to do? And the prudence gets me to do the right thing, the good thing, sorry. There's a bit of a difference between right and good, but I won't go with that one. So it gets me to recognise what is truly good in this circumstance and helps me to then, the last bit of it is, and then gives me the means by which to do it. So it's an awful lot of prudence, isn't it? In that one little bit. That's why I think the Thomas Aquinas little description got back. You say you're right reasoning, but you're right reasoning in terms of the action that's going on at this moment. Okay. So all that I've been doing with you at the moment is knowingly willed behaviour. So I've been talking to you and telling you things. I know that I'm doing it, and I'm willing it to happen. So it's knowingly willed behaviour. So this, what I'm doing, is falls within the context of the moral action. Just this teaching you at the moment. How am I exercising prudence in this? Because I'm not sitting here thinking, reasoning it all through before I actually say it all to you. So I'm not going through in my head every single moment that I'm about to say this word now. I'm not thinking of it through first to get to that word. So there's something about virtue that in its habitual nature, that it becomes second nature to us. It becomes like any habit. Cleaning your teeth in the morning. I bet you if you think about how you clean your teeth right now, just think about how you clean your teeth. Exactly what do you do? Don't tell me, just think about it. So, it's a knowingly willed behaviour. You know you're cleaning your teeth. You're willing to clean your teeth. But I bet you, if you think about it, you do the exact same way every day. But you don't do it by thinking it through. Okay, I'm now going to start on my top left dentures and then move across to my top right dentures and then go to the back lot. And you're not thinking it like that all the way through. You do when you first learn to clean your teeth. You know, mum and dad taught you, kind of, you know, you do this and you do that. And you go, oh, but once it's second nature, it's a habit, you don't think it immediately. Prudence is one of those virtues that you don't need to be thinking it all through consciously at the time. If it's become second nature to you, you will simply act in the right way in the circumstances that you find yourself. That's why I might see something and act as if it's a reaction, but it's got all that background stuff that's going on as well. Back to your intuition. All of the virtues, not just prudence, but all of the virtues also have an intuitional aspect to it. It's probably not the best word, but it'll do for the moment. But we can grasp that something is right at times without having done much thinking about it. We just can grasp that this is a good thing. Why can we do that? Because all of the virtues are also infused into us. They are things naturally that we do, and they're parts of my practice as me as a human being, but God infuses them in us as well by the very nature that he's given to us. So he gave us rationality. So the way in which God made us is significant. We're not just a blank sheet that we then start filling in ourselves. God has made us ordered for a certain way of living. And that's where the intuition comes in. As something that's infused by God into each one of us as human beings, which we intuit as being good, and then start living it as part of our own habit.
That was a talk by Bishop Peter Comensoli. This talk was part of the Human Virtues series presented by Australian Catholic University. For more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.